of the United States, Mr. J.D. Vance, who was here last year as senator, and we are very happy that he has come back to Munich, and we are very much looking forward to his speech. Please welcome Vice President J.D. Vance.
Well, thank you, and thanks to all the gathered delegates and luminaries and media professionals, and thanks especially to the hosts of the Munich Security Conference for being able to put on such an incredible event. We're, of course, thrilled to be here. We're happy to be here. And, you know, one of the things that I wanted to talk about today is, of course, our shared values. And, you know, it's great to be back in Germany. As you heard earlier, I was here last year as United States Senator. I saw Foreign Secretary David Lammy and joked that both of us last year had different jobs than we have now. But now it's time for all of our countries, for all of us who have been fortunate enough to be given political power by our respective peoples, to use it wisely to improve their lives. And I want to say that, you know, I was fortunate in my time here to spend some time outside the walls of this conference over the last 24 hours. And I've been so impressed by the hospitality of the people, even, as, of course, as they're reeling from yesterday's horrendous attack. And the first time I was ever in Munich was with my wife, actually, who's here with me today, on a personal trip. And I've always loved the city of Munich, and I've always loved its people. And I just want to say that we're very moved, and our thoughts and prayers are with Munich and everybody affected by the evil inflicted on this beautiful community. We're thinking about you, we're praying for you, and we will certainly be rooting for you in the days and weeks to come. Now, thank you. I hope that's not the last bit of applause that I get, but...
Okay, so that's Vice President J.D. Vance speaking at the Munich Security Conference. And really, it kind of was the last good applause he got. I suppose they applauded at the end, but wow, what a speech. And I wanted you to hear his introduction because it was so typically J.D. Vance, kind, winsome. And as he continues, he's still kind and winsome, but oh my goodness, did he lower the boom on the leaders of Europe. We're going to play his entire speech in different parts today. Plus, we have a very special guest. This podcast is filled with great information, and I think you're going to find it fascinating, and I think you're going to be very proud of your vice president. And you're also going to be more aware of the obstacles we face in the broader landscape of, you know, former people that we were joined to at the hip in terms of our Western civilization, our Judeo-Christian values. Things have changed so much that we hardly recognize each other. But J.D. Vance gave them a dose of, a really big dose, like of castor oil, well, otherwise known as truth. And they responded, you know, by lots of frowns and moans. And so it's quite the story, and you don't want to miss it. This is Sandy Rios, by the way, and you're listening to Sandy Rios 24/7. You know that you can call us, and we'd love hearing from you at 662-821-2040. That's 662-821-2040. You can write us always at sandy@afr.net, sandy@afr.net. You can find us on your favorite social media platform. You just can. Look for Sandy Rios 24/7, and you can find the show. You can find comments and other things, and you can... just enjoy it that way. Plus, you can find the podcast on any podcast platform. AFR.net is our home base, but you can find it on Spotify or Amazon or Apple, whatever you like to use. You can also go to sandyrios.com. That's the website, and you can listen to the show every day on that too, and plus see some pictures and maybe enjoy more information about the show. You know, babies need our help right now. The news has been moving so fast that it's really hard to keep up, and it's easy to get distracted. But here's something you don't think about or hear about much, and it matters really more than almost anything. There are babies in their mom's wombs who need our help right now. Preborn's network of clinics are on the front lines nationwide on standby for women deciding between the life of their babies. Preborn seeks these women out to help them choose life, not just for their babies, but for themselves. By introducing these hurting women to the life growing inside of them, they are twice as likely to choose life. You see, the heartbeat changes everything. That precious heartbeat that says, I'm alive. I'm alive. I'm yours. I'm your baby. It just is exciting, I can tell you, as a mom to listen to it. Today, would you be the voice for that little baby and become a monthly donor? $28 a month could be the difference between the life and death of so many lives. To donate securely, just go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy and make your most generous donation. Well, back to the show. I want, before I introduce our guest, and he's a good one, by the way, he's got so much to say about this speech and about what's going on in Europe. His name is Paul Coyer. And he works for the Institute of World Politics in Washington, D.C., and he'll join us in just a second. But I thought, just to whet your appetite, it would be good to hear just a little bit more of Vice President Vance's speech. Let's listen.
We gather at this conference, of course, to discuss security, and normally we mean threats to our external security. I see many great military leaders gathered here today. But while the Trump administration is very concerned with European security and believes that we can come to a reasonable settlement between Russia and Ukraine, and we also believe that it's important in the coming years for Europe to step up in a big way to provide for its own defense, the threat that I worry the most about vis-a-vis Europe is not Russia, it's not China, it's not any other external actor. And what I worry about is the threat from within. The retreat of Europe from some of its most fundamental values, values shared with the United States of America. Now, I was struck that a former European commissioner went on television recently and sounded delighted that the Romanian government had just annulled an entire election. He warned that if things don't go to plan, the very same thing could happen in Germany, too. Now, these cavalier statements are shocking to American ears. For years, we've been told that everything we fund and support is in the name of our shared democratic values. Everything from our Ukraine policy to digital censorship is billed as a defense of democracy. But when we see European courts canceling elections and senior officials threatening to cancel others, we ought to ask whether we're holding ourselves to an appropriately high standard. And I say ourselves because I fundamentally believe that we are on the same team. We must do more than talk about democratic values. We must live them. Now, within living memory of many of you in this room, the Cold War positioned defenders of democracy against much more tyrannical forces on this continent. And consider the side in that fight that censored dissidents, that closed churches, that canceled elections. Were they the good guys? Certainly not. And thank God they lost the Cold War. They lost because they neither valued nor respected all of the extraordinary blessings of liberty. The freedom to surprise, to make mistakes, to invent, to build. As it turns out, you can't mandate innovation or creativity, just as you can't force people what to think, what to feel, or what to believe. And we believe those things are certainly connected. And unfortunately, when I look at Europe today, it's sometimes not so clear what happened to some of the Cold War's winners. I look to Brussels, where EU commissars warn citizens that they intend to shut down social media during times of civil unrest the moment they spot what they've judged to be, quote, hateful content. Or to this very country, where police have carried out raids against citizens suspected of posting anti-feminist comments online as part of, quote, combating misogyny on the internet, a day of action. I look to Sweden, where 2 weeks ago the government convicted a Christian activist for participating in Quran burnings that resulted in his friend's murder. And as the judge in his case chillingly noted, Sweden's laws to supposedly protect free expression do not, in fact, grant, and I'm quoting, a free pass to do or say anything without risking offending the group that holds that belief. And perhaps most concerningly, I look to our very dear friends, the United Kingdom, where the backslide away from conscience rights has placed the basic liberties of religious Britons in particular in the crosshairs. A little over 2 years ago, the British government charged Adam Smith Connor, a 51-year-old physiotherapist and an army veteran, with the heinous crime of standing 50 meters from an abortion clinic and silently praying for 3 minutes. Not obstructing anyone, not interacting with anyone, just silently praying on his own. And after British law enforcement spotted him and demanded to know what he was praying for, Adam replied simply it was on behalf of the unborn son he and his former girlfriend had aborted years before. Now, the officers were not moved. Adam was found guilty of breaking the government's new buffer zones law, which criminalizes silent prayer and other actions that could influence a person's decision within 200 meters of an abortion facility. He was sentenced to pay thousands of pounds in legal costs to the prosecution. Now, I wish I could say that this was a fluke, a one-off crazy example of a badly written law being enacted against a single person, but no. This last October, just a few months ago, the Scottish government began distributing letters to citizens whose houses lay within so-called safe access zones, warning them that even private prayer within their own homes may amount to breaking the law. Naturally, the government urged readers to report any fellow citizens suspected guilty of thought crime. In Britain and across Europe, free speech, I fear, is in retreat. And in the interest of comedy, my friends, but also in the interest of truth, I will admit that sometimes the loudest voices for censorship have come not from within Europe, but from within my own country, where the prior administration threatened and bullied social media companies to censor so-called misinformation. Misinformation like, for example, the idea that coronavirus had likely leaked from a laboratory in China. Our own government encouraged private companies to silence people who dared to utter what turned out to be an obvious truth. So I come here today not just with an observation, but with an offer. And just as the Biden administration seemed desperate to silence people for speaking their minds, so the Trump administration will do precisely the opposite. And I hope that we can work together on that.
All right, so that's the second part. That's when he's just warming up. And, of course, Europe has really been the originator of the hate speech codes. We've talked about that. I have in past shows of my radio life because we fought it. We fought it internationally. And it's amazing to me that in our country, at least at this point, we've had a victory over those that would restrict and restrain speech, but not so in Europe. And so this was shocking to them to have the vice president of the United States stand in front of them and speak the truth that cut deeply, exposed and upset them. That's what he did. So we'll talk about it more. I'll play more of the speech after our conversation with Dr. Paul Courier on today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness, that we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice, not social justice, but God's justice, what's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association,
a pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
We gather at this conference, of course, to discuss security. And normally, we mean threats to our external security. I see many great military leaders gathered here today. But while the Trump administration is very concerned with European security and believes that we can come to a reasonable settlement between Russia and Ukraine, and we also believe that it's important in the coming years for Europe to step up in a big way to provide for its own defense, the threat that I worry the most about vis-a-vis Europe is not Russia, it's not China, it's not any other external actor.
And what I worry about is the threat from within, the retreat of Europe from some of its most fundamental values, values shared with the United States of America. Now, I was struck that a former European commissioner went on television recently and sounded delighted that the Romanian government had just annulled an entire election. He warned that if things don't go to plan, the very same thing could happen in Germany too. Now, these cavalier statements are shocking to American ears. For years, we've been told that everything we fund and support is in the name of our shared democratic values. Everything from our Ukraine policy to digital censorship is billed as a defense of democracy. But when we see European courts canceling elections and senior officials threatening to cancel others, we ought to ask whether we're holding ourselves to an appropriately high standard. And I say ourselves because I fundamentally believe that we are on the same team. We must do more than talk about democratic values. We must live them.
Well, that's the voice of your Vice President, J.D. Vance, and he was speaking at the Munich Security Conference in Munich, Germany, and I swear the earth moved. It was the most incredible speech. You have to understand that Europe is stiff. They're proud. And they've moved to the left so far, they're hardly recognizable. So for someone to stand before them and actually speak the truth to them so boldly, that was just a small clip of it. We're going to play more of it today or maybe in a future podcast. But it was stunning. And so the reaction has been stunning as well. And I've asked Paul Coyer to join me today. Paul is a good friend, and he's one of my favorites on international issues, and I'll tell you why. He serves as a research professor at the Institute of World Politics in Washington, D.C., as well as the associate professor, here I go trying my French, but at École Spéciale Militaire de Saint-Cyr. That's the French Army's equivalent of the West Point. He's also a non-resident senior fellow at Italia Atlantica, which is a think tank based in Rome. He has interests in Russia, China, Latin America, all kinds of things. And last time I think Paul and I really spoke, we talked about the turmoil going on in Venezuela before the last, you know, before the gangs started invading our country, when Venezuela itself was in turmoil. Paul is an expert on so many things. He's been a contributor for Forbes. He's a co-founder and contributing editor of Providence, a journal of Christianity and American foreign policy. A graduate of Yale and the London School of Economics and Political Science, you can see that Paul is well-equipped to discuss all things Europe and even Venezuela as well, because his beautiful wife is a Venezuelan opera singer. Now, Paul, that's not all of your resume, but that's pretty good, right?
That's very good. No, I just have one correction.
Okay.
As much as I love my wife and she's musically skilled, she cannot sing. She's a violinist.
Oh, a sorry.
Yes,
so sorry.
Called,
okay.
You're the good singer. She's a violinist.
Right. Well, she and I are going to have to do something together sometime. I used to write scores for violin, and they used to, and I did in concert, use violin all the time. So I'm not kidding.
Oh, good for
all
you.
All right.
Okay.
All right, Paul. J.D. Vance's speech, I've listened to it almost three times now. I my ears were blown back, but that's just me. What was your response to his speech?
Well, I mean, my response initially, and then after I get past my own personal response, I want to give you the feedback I'm getting from my friends all over Europe, including friends of mine that were in the room. My personal response is, this is reminiscent to me, and I hope I'm not being too hyperbolic here, of Reagan's 1987 Berlin Wall speech. Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
Yes.
It was about values, about these fundamental values. I mean, one of my German friends texted me after the speech. He was in the room, and he says it's about free speech. And no, it was about far more than free speech. It was about the fundamental values that have been traditional in the West that gave rise to all of our Western democratic freedoms, a basic fundamental citizenship rights that are now under threat by people that are claiming that they are defending them while fundamentally undermining them. So my response is, it was an incredible speech. Now, I'm a little bit biased. I have friends that are some of the senior advisors in national security. I very much am in sync with his mindset, with the vice president's mindset. So my response was, this is exactly what we needed to hear and what our European allies needed to hear. And if, in my mind, if these European political leaders and business leaders and what have you react as negatively as they do, and they just can't conceive that they have been running roughshod over their citizens' rights to a large degree, then they really need to be smacked upside the head with a 2x4, to be blunt. And that's what he did.
That's a diplomatic
way, but he needed to do it.
Well, let me just say, because I, at a later, probably in the next podcast, I'm going to actually play the whole speech. So people will have to settle for our description right now. But I, J.D. Vance confronted them in the most, he has an amazing way of confronting without being offensive. I just think it's a
skill that God has given him.
But it's, he talked about, yes, the loss of free speech. He talked about their insecurity at trying to control their people. He talked about illegal immigration out of control, free speech codes, punishment of Christians. I mean, all of it. And he named names and he talked to countries directly. So my follow-up for you, Paul, is you said people in the room, how did they read that room? We saw clips, you know, of stone faces. But what was your report for what what the feeling was like in that room?
One of my close friends in the room, which I can't even name or tell you who he is in terms of profession, because then people might figure out who he is and he wants to be completely in the dark. He is more conservative, but he's a nationally known figure in Germany. And so he has to keep his views under wraps to a degree because Germany is such an inhospitable place for people that are not on the left. He said stony faces would be an understatement. He told me that it felt like it was about 20 below zero in the room, in terms of just the frigid climate with which he was received. It was icy cold, immediate defensiveness on the part of the European elites, whose names we all know. They were immediately afterward giving media interviews saying, well, you know, this is completely unacceptable. The German foreign minister, Pistorius, said this. He said, this is completely unacceptable from an ally, et cetera, et cetera. We'll talk about Romania, I assume, in a couple of minutes. One Romanian journalist, who has ironically been a Freedom House Fellow, I think is one of his titles. Yeah, Freedom House Fellow. His name is Don Tapalaga. He wrote an article the very next day in a platform, g4media.ro website, that basically said the United States is now our enemy. He actually used the word enemy. He had to change that and edit that. By the next day, it said no longer is now an unstable and undependable partner, still harsh, but not as harsh as enemy. But the URL that leads to that story still has the original title, enemy. That's how threatened these guys are, which tells you that J.D. Vance was right over his target.
I want to talk about Germany in just a second, but before I do that, I found a clip this morning of Christoph Hützgen, who is the chair, I guess, of the Munich Security Conference. And this is so strange, Paul. I want to play this. He is actually, I guess this is his last year to chair this organization, which everyone seems to be so fond of. So many, 20 of our senators left the Senate and didn't confirm our next FBI director because they wanted to go to this conference. So it must be precious. But anyway, Christoph stood
It's a place to be seen if you want to be important. That's the bottom line. These are a bunch of, not everyone there is this way, but a lot of shallow people that want to be famous and want to be considered quote-unquote prominent go to this because it is the place to be seen. The same reason many people go to the World Economic Forum. Not everyone that goes to the World Economic Forum in Davos has insidious plans. Many of them are just very insecure people that want to be important and want to be seen around important people. Same thing with Munich Security Conference.
I believe that. I think that's very well put, Paul. Thank you. I wish I had the list of the 20 senators who decided to do that and are holding up the nomination of, now I'm just blanking out, by the FBI director, the new FBI director, who we desperately need. But that's off topic. Cash, thank you very much. Christoph Hützgen stood to gavel for the last time. And I don't know if you've heard this, Paul, but listen, you'll hear what I'm talking about, the weirdness of it. Here it is.
With Ewald von Kleist, this conference started as a transatlantic conference. After the speech of Vice President Vance on Friday, we have to fear that our common value base is not that common anymore. I'm very grateful to all those European politicians that spoke out and reaffirmed the values and principles that they are defending. No one did this better than President Zelensky. Let me conclude, and this becomes difficult.
And then he left the stage. He He started crying, and then he left the stage and was embracing, like, emotionally, another woman who was obviously part of leadership. Did you hear? Had you heard that, Paul?
I mean, no, I actually had not heard that, so thank you for letting me listen to that. I didn't watch that part of it, but it is par for the course. I mean, these people, you know, I've been texting with my other friends in Germany or elsewhere over the last couple of days since the vice president's speech, and one of the questions I had for them is, do these European elites actually drink their own Kool-Aid to the extent that they believe their own, to be blunt, BS? Do they believe that they are defending democratic values and citizenship rights when they very clearly are putting people in prison, like the gentleman in Britain that J.D. Vance referred to, who was I think, charged £9,000 and given, I think, a deferred sentence for praying silently for 3 minutes 50 meters from an abortion clinic entrance. That's just one example of many we can give. Then, of course, Vance talked about, you know, I want to touch on this in a couple of minutes, the canceled remaining election, which was to have taken place in early December, which a poll showed was going to be won 2-1 by a pro, not just a pro-Trump, but mainly a pro-Romanian person who was not somebody who was part of any major political movement. Therefore, he couldn't be controlled. So they canceled the election. That's one of the issues J.D. Vance talked about. And to have the Europeans react in this sort of a way, this emotional way, yeah, they have to be shaken. Because without American military support, clearly, we provide 70% of NATO's budget, and in the past have provided even more. We provide about 90 to 95% of NATO's other support mechanisms, logistics, other things like that. Without the United States, there is no NATO. So they have to take Vice President Vance seriously and President Trump seriously when he tells NATO, goes before these meetings like the Munich Security Conference and says, I could come and I could talk about numbers like the 2% of GDP you're all supposed to be spending on NATO. I could talk about joint acquisition projects, joint weapons development, all these numbers and these material factors, which are important. But far more important are the values that the NATO was created to defend. And he said that at the beginning of his speech, which is a great way, a great precursor, a great way to enter into what he then launched into. I don't see how anybody could argue against that basic logic. We need to reexamine in the West what we actually stand for. If we're censoring our citizens because they go against the status quo and against what their government thinks they should think, if we're suppressing their conscience rights, their freedom of speech, their freedom of religion, canceling elections because they don't go the way or may not go in the future the way we want them to go, then how are we any better than the Soviets that we stood arm in arm against during the Cold War, which is essentially what Vance said? If they react as negatively as they did to that, that tells me they've got a problem. And they're going to need to get to the root of that problem, and they're not going to do it by calling us, you know, telling us that we have abandoned the values that we jointly share, allegedly. So that it's a major issue. And, it remains to be seen how they respond to it, you know, in a concrete manner. But they need to. They need to do more than just condemn us. Because, like it or not, for at least the next 4 years, the United States is going to be governed by a government and an administration that shares the values of Americans, more broadly speaking, than the previous 4 years. That was the case with the Biden administration. The American people as a whole do not support what we see going on in Europe. And for a democratic country like the United States, the people have to be supportive of a foreign policy for that foreign policy to be successful. And we're seeing that coming, that convergence right now between a broad swath of the American populace that elected Trump and a very large plurality on November the 5th are supportive of his approach to foreign policy in this way. And the Europeans need to realize this. So they need to come up with something better than hugging each other, stroking puppy dogs, and, you know, coloring in coloring books to assuage or hurt feelings or whatever it is they're doing over there.
Well, I think the one point that I want to make, and I know you have experienced this too, Paul, I lived in Berlin in 1973 and 1974, actually, when the wall was still there. So I have some experience with living in Europe. And, it's come a long way, baby. It's a different country now. And I think it's hard to explain. They're almost from a different planet. I remember seeing an EU gathering. I don't know if it was the European Union. But you remember they dedicated some tunnel in I don't recall if it was in Germany, but they all gathered, all the leaders, Angela Merkel and the other European leaders as well. And this ceremony was the most pagan base, just horrific thing I had ever seen. And they're standing there with, you know, their suits and looking so serious, like we're supposed to take this seriously. I think they've descended into a wickedness, honestly, that is so far from Christianity that we are really like dealing, we don't look alike, we look alike, but we're not alike anymore. And so do you think that Germany is the leader, the strong leader kind of driving a lot of this?
Well, a lot of it's based in Germany. It's a lot more broadly spread than that, though, as I'm sure you know. I mean, you go to Brussels, you go to Paris, you go to many other Amsterdam, you go to many other cities in Western Europe, and it's the same thing. It's like a virus that has invaded their minds. And there are certain historical roots to that and theological roots to that. Europe, as you know, was very devout continent for many centuries. For various reasons, they've rejected that. I think some of that has to do with a self-immolation culture that's taken place in the wake of the First and Second World Wars, which were so destructive. I think it shocked Europeans to their cultural core to realize that they, who had seen themselves as the apex of human advancement and democracy and reasonableness and all that, could devolve into such bloodlust. And I think that that's one reason, not the only reason, but one reason behind their complete reevaluation of their civilizational foundations, which has unfortunately included rejection of Christianity, which, as you and I know I don't need to explain this to you, but when you reject the Judeo-Christian tradition, you reject the philosophical foundations that have made the Western rise of human rights, of democratic governance, of limited government, of free markets, so many other things that have brought so much freedom and prosperity to much of the world over the last decades and centuries. You undercut all of that if you lose sight of the fact that all those systems are based on a certain moral ecosystem, which is founded on certain common touchstones of truth, which derive directly from Judeo-Christian tradition. And when Europe loses that, which they have, they are not only at risk, but they are of a necessity for certain going to lose their democratic freedoms, which we now see happening. And that's what Vice President Vance called them out for.
Yeah. And I think there's probably most people know that there is a resurgence of what we would call conservatism here. But I think it's just, how shall I say? I think it's like a resurgence of the hunger for truth. All kinds of truth, all truth, among people of the world, whether it's Poland or Romania, which I want to talk about. We're going to pivot to that right now. But Romania and England, too, there are, you know,
people are
rising up to try to save their civilization as they knew it. They didn't even know, I don't think, sometimes what's gone wrong, but they know it's gone very badly. And that's why these movements are challenging these snobby European leaders who want to stop them at all costs, which brings us to Romania. When Vance mentioned Romania in the speech, honestly, Paul, I knew nothing about what had happened because we've had so much happening in our country. But what happened? It's been now 3 weeks maybe in Romania. What happened and why was he addressing that in that speech? All right, well, you'll have to stay tuned for part two with Paul to hear his answer, because we do go into what happened in Romania, and it's a fascinating story. Plus, I have some experience with that country, which I'll share with Paul on our second discussion. We're going to take just a short break here, and when we return, I'm going to play the rest of J.D. Vance's speech. Trust me, it's worth the wait. We'll be back right after this. Hi, this is Sandy Rios. A lot of Christians would be shocked to learn they are personally profiting from abortion and pornography. It's unnerving to realize just how many companies and corporations are actively involved in unbiblical practices. To help cut through the red tape, there is a great option known as Timothy Plan. Timothy Plan is the pioneer in biblically responsible investing. Timothy Plan carefully filters out companies involved in practices Scripture tells us to avoid. We are in an all-out culture war. One powerful way to make a difference is to put our money where our values are. Please go to timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy. Or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-846-7233.
7526. Discover how to be a biblically responsible investor.
Before investing, carefully consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the investment company. This and other important information can be found in the fund's prospectus. To obtain a copy, visit timothyplan.com or call 800-846-7526. Read each prospectus carefully before investing.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
As abortion continues to rise, Preborn is expanding their life-affirming care in the darkest corners of our nation to help more hurting women and save more babies. If you have the means, would you consider a leadership gift to save babies in a big way? Your tax-deductible donation of $15,000 will place an ultrasound machine in a needy women's center, saving countless lives for years to come. To donate, just go to preborn.com/Sandy, and if you don't have $15,000, of course, whatever you can give will go to help Preborn and the moms. Go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. Hi, it's Sandy Rios, your old friend from the morning show. So many crucial and frightening events are unfolding before our eyes that we have decided to re-engage with the daily news on Sandy Rios 24/7, as we once did in the mornings. I want to invite you to come over to the podcast, Sandy Rios 24/7, so that we can work our way through these difficult times together. Just go to AFR.net or any podcast platform. You can also find Sandy Rios 24/7 at sandyrios.com. And one more thing, a fun thing. My book, God's Velvet Hammer, is now on Audible. Sometimes listening is better than reading. I recorded it in my own voice, which makes it even more personal for all of you who know me so well. Audible books are available on Amazon.com. God bless each and every one of you for your faithfulness to Him. My prayer is that as we stand together in this battle, we can finish well.
The Sandy Rios 24/7 podcast are available at AFR.net. Back to Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
All right, so let's see, where were we? Well, we heard J.D. Vance give his opening remarks, you know, very nicely and welcoming, you know, really boasting and talking about how he enjoys Munich. And it is a beautiful city. I lived in Germany for a while, and Munich is Bavaria, by the way, which is where Munich is the most conservative area of Germany. And when you go to Germany, if you live in Berlin like I did, it's like being in New York. And it's hard to understand the southern Germans, the Bavarian Germans. They speak a little different. Their accent is really strong. But that's where there's a strong Catholicism down there. It's just a different kind of place. But that's where the leaders, you know, of Europe, who are not so conservative, chose to take this conference. And so that's kind of the backdrop. If you, you know, all those beautiful ornate clothing you see on Oktoberfest in Germany with the big beer steins and the pinafores that the women wear and the hats with the feathers that the gentlemen wear, that all comes from Bavaria in the Munich area. All right, so that's where he's speaking. He talks to them next about free speech and the need, the importance of them allowing their people to speak. And then he goes even deeper and gets even more offensive to them because it's more truth, probably more truth than they've heard in years. Let's listen.
In Washington, there is a new sheriff in town. And under Donald Trump's leadership, we may disagree with your views, but we will fight to defend your right to offer it in the public square, agree or disagree. Now, we're at the point, of course, that the situation has gotten so bad that this December, Romania straight up canceled the results of a presidential election based on the flimsy suspicions of an intelligence agency and enormous pressure from its continental neighbors. Now, as I understand it, the argument was that Russian disinformation had infected the Romanian elections. But I'd ask my European friends to have some perspective. You can believe it's wrong for Russia to buy social media advertisements to influence your elections. We certainly do. You can condemn it on the world stage even. But if your democracy can be destroyed with a few hundred thousand dollars of digital advertising from a foreign country, then it wasn't very strong to begin with. Now, the good news is that I happen to think your democracies are substantially less brittle than many people apparently fear. And I really do believe that allowing our citizens to speak their mind will make them stronger still. Which, of course, brings us back to Munich, where the organizers of this very conference have banned lawmakers representing populist parties on both the left and the right from participating in these conversations. Now, again, we don't have to agree with everything or anything that people say. But when people represent, when political leaders represent an important constituency, it is incumbent upon us to at least participate in dialogue with them. Now, to many of us on the other side of the Atlantic, it looks more and more like old entrenched interests hiding behind ugly Soviet-era words like misinformation and disinformation, who simply don't like the idea that somebody with an alternative viewpoint might express a different opinion or, God forbid, vote a different way or, even worse, win an election. Now, this is a security conference, and I'm sure you all came here prepared to talk about how exactly you intend to increase defense spending over the next few years in line with some new target. And that's great, because as President Trump has made abundantly clear, he believes that our European friends must play a bigger role in the future of this continent. We don't think, you hear this term, burden sharing, but we think it's an important part of being in a shared alliance together that the Europeans step up while America focuses on areas of the world that are in great danger. But let me also ask you, how will you even begin to think through the kinds of budgeting questions if we don't know what it is that we are defending in the first place? I've heard a lot already in my conversations, and I've had many, many great conversations with many people gathered here in this room. I've heard a lot about what you need to defend yourselves from, and of course that's important. But what has seemed a little bit less clear to me, and certainly I think to many of the citizens of Europe, is what exactly it is that you're defending yourselves for. What is the positive vision that animates this shared security compact that we all believe is so important? And I believe deeply that there is no security if you are afraid of the voices, the opinions, and the conscience that guide your very own people. Europe faces many challenges, but the crisis this continent faces right now, the crisis I believe we all face together, is one of our own making. If you're running in fear of your own voters, there is nothing America can do for you. Nor, for that matter, is there anything that you can do for the American people who elected me and elected President Trump. You need democratic mandates to accomplish anything of value in the coming years. Have we learned nothing that thin mandates produce unstable results? But there is so much of value that can be accomplished with the kind of democratic mandate that I think will come from being more responsive to the voices of your citizens. If you're going to enjoy competitive economies, if you're going to enjoy affordable energy and secure supply chains, then you need mandates to govern, because you have to make difficult choices to enjoy all of these things. And of course, we know that very well in America. You cannot win a democratic mandate by censoring your opponents or putting them in jail, whether that's the leader of the opposition, a humble Christian praying in her own home, or a journalist trying to report the news. Nor can you win one by disregarding your basic electorate on questions like who gets to be a part of our shared society.
Well, it's very interesting. This is a J.D. Vance in the middle of his speech to the Munich Security Conference. It's interesting that he has to remind them that they have people that they represent and that they should listen to the people that they represent. But that sounds kind of familiar, doesn't it? Isn't that what we've just been through in our country, where the people had common sense and were fighting the draconian leadership of people just like these leaders? This is what Europe is going through in these various countries. So JD is cracking this open. Even if they continue, he's going to expose them. And aren't we grateful? And we need to remember that there are people all over the globe in the same situation that we have been in, who are looking to us with excitement and hope for the first time in many years. Well, he closes out his speech to them by addressing the whole issue of the illegal immigrants they have allowed to really just invade Europe, ignoring the borders. We've talked about this for years, and here is Vice President J.D. Vance addressing the Munich Security Conference on this issue.
And of all the pressing challenges that the nations represented here face, I believe there is nothing more urgent than mass migration. Today, almost 1 in 5 people living in this country moved here from abroad. That is, of course, an all-time high. It's a similar number, by the way, in the United States, also an all-time high. The number of immigrants who entered the EU from non-EU countries doubled between 2021 and 2022 alone, and of course, it's gotten much higher since. And we know this situation, it didn't materialize in a vacuum. It's the result of a series of conscious decisions made by politicians all over the continent and others across the world over the span of a decade. We saw the horrors wrought by these decisions yesterday in this very city. And of course, I can't bring it up again without thinking about the terrible victims who had a beautiful winter day in Munich ruined. Our thoughts and prayers are with them and will remain with them. But why did this happen in the first place? It's a terrible story, but it's one we've heard way too many times in Europe and unfortunately too many times in the United States as well. An asylum seeker, often a young man in his mid-20s, already known to police, rams a car into a crowd and shatters a community. How many times must we suffer these appalling setbacks before we change course and take our shared civilization in a new direction? No voter on this continent went to the ballot box to open the floodgates to millions of unvetted immigrants. But you know what they did vote for? In England, they voted for Brexit, and agree or disagree, they voted for it. And more all over Europe, they're voting for political leaders who promise to put an end to out-of-control migration. Now, I happen to agree with a lot of these concerns, but you don't have to agree with me. I just think that people care about their homes, they care about their dreams, they care about their safety and their capacity to provide for themselves and their children. And they're smart. I think this is one of the most important things I've learned in my brief time in politics. Contrary to what you might hear a couple mountains over in Davos, the citizens of all of our nations don't generally think of themselves as educated animals or as interchangeable cogs of a global economy. And it's hardly surprising that they don't want to be shuffled about or relentlessly ignored by their leaders. And it is the business of democracy to adjudicate these big questions at the ballot box. I believe that dismissing people, dismissing their concerns, or worse yet, shutting down media, shutting down elections, or shutting people out of the political process protects nothing. In fact, it is the most surefire way to destroy democracy. And speaking up and expressing opinions isn't election interference. Even when people express views outside your own country, and even when those people are very influential. And trust me, I say this with all humor, if American democracy can survive 10 years of Greta Thunberg scolding, you guys can survive a few months of Elon Musk. But what German democracy, what no democracy, American, German, or European will survive, is telling millions of voters that their thoughts and concerns, their aspirations, their pleas for relief are invalid or unworthy of even being considered. Democracy rests on the sacred principle that the voice of the people matters. There's no room for firewalls. You either uphold the principle or you don't. Europeans, the people, have a voice. European leaders have a choice. And my strong belief is that we do not need to be afraid of the future. You can embrace what your people tell you, even when it's surprising, even when you don't agree. And if you do so, you can face the future with certainty and with confidence, knowing that the nation stands behind each of you. And that, to me, is the great magic of democracy. It's not in these stone buildings or beautiful hotels. It's not even in the great institutions that we have built together as a shared society. To believe in democracy is to understand that each of our citizens has wisdom and has a voice. And if we refuse to listen to that voice, even our most successful fights will secure very little. As Pope John Paul II, in my view, one of the most extraordinary champions of democracy on this continent or any other, once said, "Do not be afraid." We shouldn't be afraid of our people, even when they express views that disagree with their leadership. Thank you all. Good luck to all of you. God bless you.
So, and with that, J.D. Vance was finished. They did applaud him, but boy, they are upset. And you heard my discussion with Paul kind of spelling that out. Now you can understand why they're upset. He has really confronted them. It's think about our Democrats here who are having, you know, they are apoplectic about what Elon Musk and President Trump are doing to the agencies, cutting them, daring to go inside and cut waste, exposing their misdeeds. And that's actually what's happening in Europe as well, except that we're powerless to change what's happening there. But we can influence them. Now, one point that we made, I made with Paul that I think needs to be underscored. And I'll underscore it this way. I just read, perhaps you heard this also over the weekend, that there's a conservative, and I'm using my fingers here, conservative blogger, influencer, YouTube, I'm not exactly sure how to describe her. Her name is Ashley St. Clair. She's a beautiful girl, if you Google her name. But she has announced that she has a five-month-old baby, and the father is Elon Musk. Now, I don't know if Elon Musk has responded to this yet, but... This is happening while he's holding his a little four-year-old son X on his shoulders and having him in the Oval Office. Now, why am I mentioning this in the context of this? Because when I heard that, it just really grieved me, and it made the point that I've been trying to make: the conservative, again with quotes, I use my fingers, movement in this country is not a moral movement, not yet. I think we have the beginnings of it, but not yet. If I had a chance to talk to Elon Musk and Ashley St. Clair, I would say something like this. I would say to Elon Musk, you understand the importance of not throwing away your money, of spending your money well and not wasting your time. So then you have to remember that in the economy of God and his creation, you don't want to waste your personal gift of sexuality, what God has given you, the way he's made you, your ability to procreate also has to be done with control. It can't be wasted. It can't be spread about with total abandon. It's just not the way God created us. And there is a better way, Elon. There's a better way. And if you want to be a real man, you have to control yourself. A real man is not someone who just has lots of children by lots of women. That's a measure of lack of self-control, which is the thing that you are addressing in the public sphere. And I urge you, God has something better for you than this. I would say to Ashley St. Clair, Ashley, you're a beautiful girl. And this is her second illegitimate child, as I understand. That's what I understand. Why are you giving yourself so freely? The treasure that God has given you, your beauty, the intimacy that God has given you to reserve for one person who really loves you, not one someone who's already married and has other children. You are throwing away this resource, this beauty, this beautiful gift that God has given you to share only with one person for a lifetime. It's a treasure, and you have given that up. And I would urge you to stop. If you're going to be conservative in other areas, can you not understand that your body, the treasure that you have, your conservatism has to translate to how you handle yourself in this arena? And with that, I pivot back to what we were talking about. The conservative, and I use quotes again, a woman who's running in Germany is, as Paul said, a lesbian. And I would have the same conversation with her. See, the missing link here is understanding that God's way is best on economics, on free speech, on freedom of thought, on the way you run a country, on the way you regard people. It also applies to the way you conduct your lives in the privacy of your home or wherever you are, in your private moments. It's a thing of self-control. God has in mind for you self-control. And therefore, when you use self-control, there is more fulfillment, not less. When you act upon your sexuality with total abandon, there's never completion. There's never satisfaction. It's temporary. It's not permanent. And that's why I say to you, all of you, this thing that's happened in this country and that's happening in Europe is not enough, not yet. I think truth reveals, in time, people have a heart for truth, will come to the full truth of things. And that's what I'm hoping for Elon Musk and for Ashley St. Clair, for this girl who's Alice Weidel, who's running for prime minister in Germany, and all the rest of them, that there would be a full understanding that there's more to this. There's a foundation that's more firm than our Constitution. It's the foundation our founding fathers used. It's the knowledge of God and the boundaries that he draws for our lives in everything that we do. It's in him that we live and move and have our being. He's not absent from any area of it. And so for those of us that are Christians, this is the message. This is the message. Not condemnation, but winsome winning of the culture to God's ways, because after all, that is God's way. He didn't send his son to condemn, John 3:17 says, for God sent not his son to condemn the world, but that the world through him might be saved. And so with that, because that's the heart of God, I say, let's go forth and talk to people in this way, without condemnation, but winsomely, about what it means to really find the truth, because after all, God is truth. All right, I've said enough today, and I really do appreciate your patience. I really enjoyed my conversation with Paul Coyer. I hope you did too. And before we say goodbye, I want to thank Timothy Plan, because we couldn't do this if they didn't sponsor us. And they teach you how to put your money where your values are and discover how to be a biblically responsible investor. Visit timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy. Or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-TIM-PLAN. Well, thank you for listening to today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.